And I'll give you all my titles in a minute because you should know them, because we're going to be talking about grant pay applications. And one of the ways you let people know about who you are and what you can do is by giving them all your titles when you write a grant and reapply. So what's relevant to you is that I am the PI of a large P60, a multidisciplinary clinical research grant that's awarded to BU, actually, technically, whereas I'm the PI. And I have a couple of R01s and a U01. I am the director of training for the Boston University CTSI, so I run the training program for the CTSI. And I was, for many years, a member of different NIH study sections. The SBSR, most recently, which is what's often called the orthopedic study section, and before that, a study section that no longer exists called EDC1, which has now been transformed into the NAME study section, which is a musculoskeletal epidemiology study section. In addition to that, I have served on innumerable ad hoc review committees for the federal government, both for the military, the VA, and NIH, and I served as a study section member for English, Dutch, Australian, Canadian, and Swedish grant review sessions, some of which have involved travel and some of which have not. So I have a lot of grant review experience, both with initially submitted grants and with revisions. So we're going to talk about when you get a grant review back, okay, what you do with those summary statements that you've got and how you use them to make decisions about what you're going to do and then how you act on those decisions. It's not quite the same as a talk that you might have heard or a session that you might have gone to about how to write a grant. We're going to assume that you know how to write a grant, that you've already done one, okay, and that now your decisions are about what do you do with the grant you've written that didn't get funded. Okay, so we're going to talk about a review of options in submitting a grant, rates of success of grants at the NIH, deciding about resubmission, examples of approaches that I'm going to give you from our group's own experience about summary statements and when we've decided not to pursue a resubmission, when we've decided to pursue a resubmission, and why. Okay, and what elements of the resubmission, how we've responded to the concerns that were expressed that allowed us to resubmit. And then how one writes to the reviewers. Now, I'll leave time, hopefully, if you want, for examples that you might have brought, if you have them. That'd be absolutely fine. There may or may not be time at the end for that, but I'm also happy to stay around if you want to, bounce some stuff off with me. I'm also, because it depends on whether the institute person who was assigned to your grant is willing to advocate for you and push at counsel for your funding. Okay, so if you're close, you can sometimes get in. And if you're close and look and you think you're within funding range, you can sometimes not get funded, okay, because the institute and the person at the institute assigned to it will not regard it as an institute priority. So, is the score within the pay line? If no, does program staff recommend for select pay because it's high priority? If no, it's not funded. If yes, they then present this to the head of the institute and to an advisory council that advises that person. And they will then sometimes say, yeah, you know what, we're going to pay this grant, okay, even though it didn't make the pay line because it's high priority. So you need to have a conversation with program staff. If your grant's summary statement, if your score is not terrible, okay, you need to ask them, well, is this payable? Okay, and they'll say, no, not at current thresholds. Well, is this of priority to the institute? Well, maybe. And you sort of see if you can convince them to advocate for your grant. If the council approves, then the grant gets funded. Right. So I've had a number of grants that, maybe one that I remember prominently, that was not within pay line, that was advocated for and got funded. So and then if the score is within the pay line, that doesn't mean you're automatically funded. The institute may say, well, we've already got three or four grants doing the same thing. We don't want to fund that. Okay? Or they may have human studies concerns. You look like you're shocked. It's automatic. Nothing's automatic. Okay? It's usual. The reason they have pay lines is because they know that they can afford to fund everything within that pay line, plus a little bit more, which gives them the reach to go outside the pay line. But occasionally, even when there's stuff within the pay line, they won't fund it. Not often, but sometimes. And yeah, you always hear stories from your friends over beer late at night saying, "Yeah, I was in the fourth percentile and they still didn't fund me," you know, because they said it wasn't priority. So it doesn't happen often, but it happens. So those sometimes get not funded. Question?
I have a question about the difference between the score and the priority score. Is the pay line only look at the score?
The pay line is the percentile. It is not your priority score. Your percentile is determined by all of the other grants that that study section has reviewed, not just in this particular generation of grant reviews, but over the last several ones. They will then percentile it against the scores of that study section over the last few reviews. So that's the that's how your percentile gets generated.
Okay. So in the gray area, so there could be cases you have a percentile that is out of the pay line, but you have a very good priority score.
Yes, and that's an argument you can make to the administrator at the institute. I got a 21. You know, I realize it's 30th percentile, but it's a 21. They love this. Okay? You know, that's the conversation you need to have. So one of the things I'm going to remind you as we go forward is conversations are important here, with NIH staff included. So there's NIH study section is 14 to 30 NIH-funded scientists representing a wide range of expertise and geographic and gender diversity. Each grant is reviewed by at least two members. Members review 6 to 10 grants each. You probably already know this, but just to remind you, grant review study section is a huge amount of work. Be nice to these people. They are overwhelmed with stuff to review and read. Okay, be absolutely clear in what you're proposing and what you're asking. Be repetitive and simple, or they'll miss it. Not because they're not smart, but because they just have way too much to read. Study section reviews 80 to 100 grants in a two-day session. You go quick. And each study meets three times a year for 2 days each time. Okay, so when you've submitted a grant, both an original initial submission and a resubmission, you are not done. Okay, you say, "I clicked on it, the institution submitted it, I see it's in ERA Commons, now I got to wait for the review." I think that's not so wise. Okay, so when check the commons to determine the review group, examine the names of the listed reviewers. Check with your mentors and senior colleagues. Are these reasonable people? Do they know something about this topic? Are they going to be supportive of this research? If they don't, call the SRA or the institute person assigned and say, "Look, there's no one on that study section that knows anything about this topic. Okay, is there another study section?" You've assigned the study section to a bunch of imaging people. There's only one element of this grant that has anything to do with imaging. How about a study section that deals with something else? Okay. So be aware of where it's assigned, because that's going to drive a lot of the comments and the way people relate to your grant. Are those with the right expertise reviewing your grant? Act early with institute assignee to change reviewers if needed. The minute you see where it's assigned, the NIH website allows you to go to that study section, so it's assigned to name, NAME, which is a new name for one I used to serve on. I would then go to name, okay? They have a roster for name that's on the NIH website. And I'd look and I'd say, okay, who's on that study section? These are people in flesh and blood like you and me. You know, they have biases like you and me. They have expertise like you and me. Your mentor, your senior people in your department are going to know them all, mostly. Okay, and they're going to know what the pros and cons of those reviewers are. Okay, you want to know. You want to know if they have the right expertise.
I submitted it. It was reviewed. I got a grant number, but it wasn't funded. There was one particular person on the committee that I knew had written a paper similar to mine, but in many ways it was different. And I tried to explain in the grant how it was different. But the reviews came back, and it was obvious that we definitely In that case, if I had.
Why don't we talk about that? We'll get to re-reviews in a minute.
Okay.
Okay, because I think you're ultimately asking, unless you were close in the gray area where you can fight, where someone would fight for your grant, okay, you're going to have to deal with that in the revised submission.
What I was thinking, though, of if I had seen this in the initial submission,
right,
what would you have done?
I would have called whomever I could call, and I'm not sure who you're. I know all the SRAs because I served on study section for all this time, so I can call them. I don't know if you could call them, but I think you probably can. Okay, and I would give exactly what you said. I'd say, look, I'm concerned that Joe Smith is on the study section. Joe Smith has written something that is similar to the work I'm doing, but directly contradicts its conclusions and would suggest that it might not be. But my work wouldn't be of value. Is there any way that Joe maybe not review this grant, okay? And they may not tell you whether you're going to do that, but and then I would follow that up with an email or some documentation that you've said that. So why do I do that? Because I want to be able to appeal a summary statement if I have to, okay? So if Joe, if they haven't told you, and it turns out Joe Smith reviewed it, and it turns out Joe Smith drove the score because he probably knows more about this topic than anybody else, okay, and your score is still close, okay, it's not triaged, okay, I would then take out that letter I sent to the SRA and I'd say, okay, I'm going to appeal this, okay. Now, appeals don't usually work, but your arguments get pretty persuasive when you say, look, before this was ever reviewed, I alerted the SRA to the concerns I had about Joe Smith. It's quite obvious to me that Joe Smith reviewed this grant, okay? And the contents of that review are what I would have expected. Okay, even so, it got pretty close. How about we, if nothing more, if you revise and resubmit, Joe Smith will never see that grant again, okay? Which is sort of what you want in the first place. All right. So the topics you all know, these are the most important ones nowadays: significance, innovation, approach, and other factors. Okay, and then priority scores. Our groups are not dealt with the same as K's. K's are all scored. Okay, ours are 50. The bottom 50% are not scored. The reason for that is that study sections are doing 80 to 100 grants. Okay, you don't have time to sit and talk about all the grants. You talk about the top half. Okay, so the way that's done is there are two or three reviewers for each of the grants. If any of those reviewers wants the grant discussed, the grant will be discussed. But the SRA, who's running the study section, will say, I have a motion to not discuss Felsen's grant. Okay, is there anybody who wants to discuss Felsen's grant? Hold on, give me a minute. And if somebody raises their hand, my grant will be discussed. If nobody raises their hand, it gets triaged. Okay, now, the SRA has seen already the preliminary scores from those reviewers and knows that Felsen's grant may be in the bottom half, more or less. Okay, so that would then triage the grant, unless somebody really wants to discuss it, in which case it'll get discussed. Question?
So even with the new scores, it's just going from 1 to 9. So
yes.
That means that 1 to 9 is still the top 50%.
No. The top 50% is 1 to 4, 1 to 5. And everything below 4 on average scoring is going to probably be triaged.
So it just doesn't get scored, yeah.
Doesn't get a discussed consensus score. Get scores from individual reviewers that you'll see in your summary statement, but doesn't get a consensus after discussion, here's what we arrived at score.
Okay. Just one quick follow-up.
Sure.
R21's
same.
The recent one, yeah, but I got an impact score of 9%.
An impact score is an overall discussed score.
NIEHS said the leading risk for so it just sort of really.
That's weird.
Yeah,
I don't know what to tell you.
Okay.
So priority scores 1 to 9 are assigned usually by consensus after hearing of reviews. And then priority scores are assigned a percentile ranking. This is what I said to you earlier, based on current and previous study section reviews. So they'll take all the scores from the last 3 or 4 study section meetings of that study section and the percentile your score against those. Okay. And then summary statement is prepared over the next few weeks by the SRA who sat and took notes while all this was being discussed. All right, and then K grants are reviewed according, this is a K grant review form template. And you could see there are other things here. The candidate is reviewed, career development plan. These are really important for K grants. These are not trivial. It's not all about the research plan. Sometimes you'll get a great research plan in a K grant, and there's not adequate mentoring or career development plan, and the grant gets trashed. Okay? Not because the science wasn't good, not because the applicant wasn't good, but because the mentoring career development just wasn't that great. Okay. So, and then I've talked about the pay lines. Those are general guides. Grants and summary statements are sent to what's called an institute advisory council. Every institute, NCI, NHLBI, all of them have these advisory councils. The council can change the ranking of a grant based on institute priorities. Question? No? Institute staff make ultimate funding decisions. So I want to just tell you, I'm going to tell you about our successes in a minute, but I want to tell you about K successes. K's in general, the NIH has prioritized and continues to prioritize the career development funding of young investigators. That is to them the future. Okay? They want people to get K grants. And even if the R rates of funding are low, they still want to put a lot of people on the pipeline as researchers who are funded. And so K grant success has remained high, even as NIH R success rates have dropped.
I think you said, though, the K-20s
are the initials,
right?
Yes, but K-01s and K-08s also.
But this is just K-20.
That's correct. I'm going to show you K-08s in a minute.
Okay.
Hold on. So here's K-08s, and you can see, if anything, they're even higher. And K01s K01s, which are non-clinician ones, also in the 30 percentile range. They're all well above the R01 success rates. And then this is R. So this says research project grants, competing applicants, awards, and funding rates. So these are R award rates. This includes now R01s, R21s, R03s, P60s, P30s. So center grants, core center grants, includes U awards. So all of those things that are grant, vanilla, plain vanilla grants to the NIH, okay, for science, not for